welcome back to Lipstick and Lightsabers. I am Shannon.
And I'm Alex.
And we are back with another episode of The Bad Bachelor. We have 4 episodes to cover this time because since we've been gone, we had 2 episodes and then a 2-parter. So lots to unpack with what we've seen so far.
Yeah. I'm so excited to get into it. I love The Bad Batch. It's so good.
Honestly, like, episode 4 and episode 5 so far have been, like, my favorites. I really liked episode 1. Don't get me wrong. Don't get it twisted. But, like, episode...
We differ on this, I think.
Do we really?
I think episode 1 and 3 have been my favorite.
Okay. I mean, those are both really good.
They're very sad. Like, they just, would like, you say, have, like, sad
Would you say episode
tones.
5 is not sad?
Yeah, that is sad. I just, like, really, really enjoyed the new dynamic we were given with Crosshair and Omega.
Mm-hmm.
And the mystery unfolding over the, like, blood samples and stuff.
That is so true. Like, episode 3 was, like, so tense with that.
Yeah. And the introduction to Batcher, like, that relationship, too. Like, I think that's why I really feel like 1 and 3 have been my favorite. Yeah. But there hasn't been a bad episode. I've enjoyed all of them.
No, they've all been really, really good. Yeah, I think the reason why I vibe with, like, episode 4 is kind of the same thing. Because it's that relationship between Omega and Crosshair, which I really like.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about episode 4 and 5 is how it's exploring Crosshair. Because it's like... He has to fit back in to his old life. And you really see that in episode 5. Like, I will go on record. You know, I am still a record girly. However, Crosshair is my son. And I love him. And I want him to succeed. And him and Batcher are everything to me.
Like, he's like the dad that didn't want the dog and then ends up loving the dog.
Yeah, that's his dog.
Yeah.
I saw somebody make a comparison that Batcher is like a, like, emotional support dog. You know, like when soldiers have, like, trauma dogs? It's like that. And I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. So before we get into all that, we do have quite a few recommendations to get into. So first things first. So last time we talked, Alex had been to Disney, and now I have been to Disney, and one of my biggest things to recommend, listen, if y'all have never done Behind the Seeds, when I tell you this is, like, the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Did they let you try any vegetables?
Yeah, we had a cucumber.
Oh, was it good?
It was good. I don't even like cucumbers, and it was good. We got to feed the fish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, listen,
where the gators used to be, the little gators.
Yeah. Like, you know, I always think to myself, because my degree is in plant and soil science, and I always think to myself that, like, maybe I shouldn't have done that, or maybe I wasn't as into it as I thought I was, or blah blah blah, because, like, as I get removed from it, and, like, I teach science, but, like, it's not always my degree. I always wonder if, like, maybe it wasn't the right thing for me to do. And then I do something like this, and I'm like, no. Like, I am so unbelievably obsessed with everything they talk about behind. Like, the first thing you do is you go into their pest management, like, laboratory. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I had to do this for my degree. I had to do this when I worked in a greenhouse. We use the same species of wasp. I teach this to my kids. Like, I was all about it. Like, and then
you were like that meme where it's like the other people in the tour, like, they don't know I am an expert on all of this too.
No, it really was, because he asked for questions, and, like, I had a question and I asked it, and then, like, later on I was like, I don't want to ask too many questions. I don't want to be like that person. And then, like, I found out that they do research for, like, they work with, like, the USDA about, like, researching how to grow food in, like, conditions like the space station or other planets. Guys, baby Shannon, that's what she wanted to be when she grew up. I wanted to do that. And I was like, oh, my God. It was, like... I was living. And even, like, he started explaining the cooling system that they have in the greenhouse, and I had an exam about that cooling system.
I was like, Shannon, like, Shannon should be a tour guide for Behind the Seats because you already have museum experience.
I do. I've already
And you already have all it. The plant knowledge.
I do. Like, our tour guide originally started in Animal Kingdom doing something else. But, like, there were these other girls who came out and they were, like, digging in the sand. And I'm like, how do I become them? How do I get to dig in the sand? What? They, like, I've looked into it. They won't accept me unless I just, like, enter into the Disney ranks and work my way up. There's no...
Oh, that's so annoying.
I know.
But you're, like, so overqualified
to have
to go up the Disney ranks.
Yes. Like, I would have to start like that guy. Like, start as some kind of something at Animal Kingdom and then hope I get placed there. Unless I want to be, like, annoying. A gardener. I know. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. Because then, like, we rode Living with the Land because my mom had never ridden it. And it's just like, This is the best.
Did you, you rode it after?
We rode it after.
So she got to walk around and then ride it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The triple threat would have been to have lunch at the restaurant that rotates.
I know. Yeah. And so, like, we did the quick service that was also there. Mm-hmm. But that would have been... Like, next time. Like,
yeah.
Honestly, and, like, I was telling Alex about this because I also rode Guardians, and it's, like, as much as I love Guardians, like, Living with the Land, there's something that happens when that pan flute comes on.
I just, like, I'm so, so grateful that Living with the Land is still there because it's the only, I guess it's the only original...
Yeah.
Land Pavilion ride. Because Food Rocks is gone. You would have loved Food Rocks, Shannon.
It's just, I loved learning
about,
like...
You have to watch
it.
You know what you have to do after this tonight?
Oh, watch
you
gotta
it. Go on YouTube and watch an old recording of Food Rocks.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh. Yeah, but Behind the Seeds has definitely become, like, a must do. Like, if I, like, anytime I go to Epcot, we have to do Behind the Seeds. Like, Alex, next time we go to Disney, we're doing Behind the Seeds.
Okay.
I was really upset that I didn't get to keep my badge for Behind
the
Seeds.
Didn't you keep it?
No.
Did it say your name on it?
No.
Oh, what? Okay, that's weird.
No,
maybe
they just...
they're getting cheaper with their tours because I haven't done Behind the Seeds, but I've done others, and they do make those, like, little tags so you can... you know that person is on the tour, and they always, you always got to keep them.
No, it was just, like, a generic, like, they already had it on the lanyard, so that, like, if you're walking around, they knew you were on the tour.
They didn't give you anything except for a cucumber.
Well, I got a printed handout for how to make my own hydroponic garden.
That's cool.
That I might do with my class.
That would,
like,
be cool.
It doesn't look that hard, actually. I just need all the parts for it. I don't know if I could do it as, like, an end of the year project, but, like, my kids really want to do space, so we're probably going to do that. But, like, that might be something that I do, like, next year, like, with, like, my high class or something. We have, like, an hour in the day where we kind of do, like, other things. So that could be really cool. Or I might, like, give it – I think I'm going to make a copy and give it to the ag science teacher, too, if he wants to build one. Because it's just, like – I was just jamming to talk about hydroponics. Oh my God, they had a sign with the exact chemical ratio for what they put in their nutrient solution.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my God, what do you mean? I can just know what you put in your nutrient solution. This isn't a secret.
It's like the secret recipe. Yeah. It's like, they're giving it away.
Well, like, I had to memorize, like, a special periodic table that's, like, just for organic chemistry.
Shannon's going to start, like, Breaking Bad, the nutrient solution in her backyard this summer.
Yeah. I just got to get my hands on some molybdenum, you know? Yeah, no.
This is coming from someone who, like, I'm watching Breaking Bad for the first time,
oh,
so
really?
I think it's funny. Yeah.
Yeah, no. 10 out of 10. Amazing experience. I told my mom I was surprised that we weren't, like, it was a full tour. Mm-hmm. Like, there was, like, 14 of us. I was surprised there were so many of us.
Yeah. It's a popular tour.
Yeah.
They do it multiple times a day. It's popular. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's affordable. That's the thing.
It is affordable.
Like, it is one of the cheapest tours that you can do. So I think a lot of people latch onto that.
Yeah. And it's really nice. They give you like a little thing. Like he talks into like a microphone and you get like a little earpiece. Yeah.
They do that
so loud in there.
They do that for the other tours too. I've done I've done Keys to the Kingdom and Magic Kingdom twice. It's so good. That one is like that one's like 3 or 4 hours. Like it's a good, and it includes lunch.
Okay.
I don't know how much it is now. It probably has gone up in price because Disney things do. But yes, it is a decent value because lunch is also included in it. But it's cool because you get to ride certain rides and you're being told secrets about them. Like Haunted Mansion is usually one of the ones you do, or Jungle Cruise. And like instead of the skipper talking, your tour oh, guide cool. does the spiel, but instead of doing jokes, she like tells history about the ride.
That's really
while
cool.
you're on the Jungle Cruise.
Yeah. That's really, really cool. See, like stuff like that is so fun, and I feel like it keeps like the magic alive. Like I don't know how to explain it. Like I was just like so giddy.
Mm-hmm. Doing this. And now when you get to go into the Utilidors, which some people won't do that tour because they don't want to break that magic.
Oh yeah. But I feel like it just adds this whole other layer. Like I don't know how to explain that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because like when you go on Behind the Scenes, you do have to go like outside, like around the greenhouse, mm-hmm. and then before you go back in, and like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like, it feels like you're closer to it somehow.
Yeah, it is really weird being backstage.
Yeah.
It's like an interesting thing. I don't think I've ever been backstage for Epcot, but I do know that I think the Run Disney races go backstage in Epcot because you do World Showcase as part of the 5K and the other races too, I think.
See, like, I don't even run. I couldn't do a 5K, but like, I'll admit, going through Epcot, when I see those videos, I'm like, that's kind of cool.
Well, you know what? The 5K, you can walk it. I think like it gets more serious once you get to the 10K.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you could potentially get swept, right? Like the ladies with the balloons could come get you and you have to stop. But I'm pretty sure in the 5K that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's no like pace you have to keep up with. And there's a bunch of characters around the track that you can take photos with. I've done the 5K on Castaway Key.
Mm-hmm.
So they always have one when you stop there when you're on the Disney cruise. And mm-hmm. that one's just fun and free. That one doesn't cost any money. But you can walk it. Like, it's chill.
That's nice. I like when it's chill. So moving on from that, we have a lot of like kind of movie and Oscar things, but one thing before that, so I am currently reading Yellowface by R.F. Kuang. I have like 2 hours left. I'm like almost done with it.
Mm-hmm.
This book
How long is it?
It's like only like 8.5 hours.
Okay, because I'm on Babel right now, so like I'm also reading an R.F. Kuang book.
But that,
I'm reading Babel, and
it's so
long.
Different. Babel is so long. And that book is
like
so dense.
It, though.
No, it's good. Here's the thing, this book. So, like, you know, R.F. Kuang wrote that. She wrote The Poppy War, too, right?
Heavy.
About, you know, it's about, like, the opium wars in China and, like, other things like that. Like, that's mm-hmm. what she's delving into. Yellowface is about a white author who...
It's like a modern story. It's not, like, a historical thing.
She quote-unquote steals the manuscript.
Like a manuscript of a...
of a historical Chinese fiction story.
Oh.
It feels so... like, I feel like R.F. Kuang, like, took so much of, like, her life and put it in this book. It's mm-hmm. so wild to me because, like, knowing, like, how... like, the research and things that she does for those books and, like, seeing it in Yellowface is so wild. And then, like, you know, R.F. Kuang, I can't ever remember if she went to Harvard or Yale.
She went to Oxford.
Was it Oxford? Okay, it was one of those big ones, right?
Yeah. And she's in the UK, I'm pretty sure.
Well, maybe she got...
but maybe she also went to one of the Ivies.
Well,
maybe she did both.
And she got, you know, her book deal when she was very young. Like, she's, like, our age.
Mm-hmm.
So she got, you know, Poppy War came out when she was very young. And one of the characters in this book, like, she has a British accent because she went to one of those British schools before she went to Yale. She writes, you know, historical Chinese fiction, like all this. And this is about a white author who's like kind of plagiarizing her work. And it's told from that white author's perspective. And it feels like reading Carrie Soto, because Carrie Soto, you know, is like a horror, like she's such an unlikable person.
Oh, I love Carrie. I love that book.
Right.
Also, she did go to Yale. So I think it was Yale. And then after she went to Oxford.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's and that's what it's like in this book. And it's just like the main character, Juniper, is just so like you see her doing these things and like the way it's written is like she's such an unreliable narrator. And so you're hearing all these things and it's like, I understand your reasoning, but honey, you need to stop. I just feel like I'm reading Carrie Soto so much. It's so good. Like, I cannot even begin to explain how good it is. And I feel like R.F. Kuang just operates on some other higher level of thinking, because this satire is like so aware. It's very, very, it, even like, you know, recently all of the stuff like with Kate Corrane, like this book came out before that and it almost feels like a commentary of that.
Like, I do need to correct myself, because I feel like she deserves a lot of respect for her education.
Oh, please.
She went to Georgetown, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then she went to Cambridge.
Okay.
Okay. And then, and that's where she got her master's, at Cambridge. So she got her BA at Georgetown. Then her master's at Cambridge, and then she got another master's at Oxford, okay? And now she's doing her PhD, or she maybe she's done because she started it in 2020, her PhD at Yale. Sorry, I had to give her some respect for all that, because I was like, well, I don't know, she was Oxford and Yale, I don't know.
Does it say how old she is?
She's 27, she's born in 96.
Like, she's a 96 baby and she's done all that. Like, oh my gosh. There's even a part in Yellowface where, like, they're trying to get this author, because it's at a weird point in her career. It's like, have you ever considered writing for, like, an IP? And she goes on this whole holier-than-thou tirade about how, like, oh, you have to be, like, the lowest of low to stoop down to writing for something like Marvel or Star Wars or blah, blah, blah. Knowing R.F. Kuang is written for Star Wars.
That's so funny.
It's so funny. Like, just knowing more about R.F. Kuang, like, enhances the story. I can't recommend it enough. It is sensational. Like, I know most people already know this, but it's so good. I'm obsessed with it. I'm gonna be sad when I finish it. Like, I'm just, it's blowing me away. It's blowing me away. So to get into some movies, so Alex has watched everything that was nominated for an Oscar.
I missed a few. There were a few that I wanted to get to that I didn't, but I did see all the Best Picture nominations.
What did you miss that you wanted to get to?
I wanted to see Society of the Snow.
You haven't seen that yet?
No.
Oh, I watched that.
You did? Okay, yeah. So the one that I really wanted to see that I didn't get to before the Oscars, Society of the Snow.
You guys don't understand. It's shocking that I have seen a movie that Alex has.
Yeah. So there is that one. I'm trying to remember. I think there were, I didn't see all of the ones that were in the animation category. This is very embarrassing, but I haven't seen Nimona yet. So there's that one.
Alex!
Both of these are on Netflix. I don't know why I haven't watched it yet.
Both of these are on Netflix.
Well, I can tell you why. It's because Netflix, I'm like blocked out of my Netflix. But anyways, no, I should have watched it by now. That's on me. That's why I'm saying I'm embarrassed about it. So those two are the main two I can think of that I was like, oh, Godzilla Minus One, but that's hard to access. Like, that's not accessible in North America right now. At least it was in theaters for a short stint.
It was
like
very short amount of time.
Availability was kind of not there for it.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, I want to see that. And I still haven't seen Boy and the Heron. And I'm so glad that it's going to get re-released in theater. So hopefully I can see it this time.
Yeah, it's good. But yeah, I've seen all the Best Picture nominees, and I was telling Shannon, I honestly think that 9 of the 10 of them were fantastic, Maestro being the only one that I didn't like. Mm. Now, even Maestro, though, does have good things. I have good things to say about Maestro. Like, I thought the cinematography was, like, the best cinematography of some of the movies I've seen this year. It honestly did deserve that nomination in the cinematography category. But apart from that, that movie was just, I think, a hot mess. Yeah,
that's what I've heard.
Like, Bradley Cooper, like, you're a good actor, but you don't, like, I feel like he just, like, overdid it. Like, he overacted, like, so much. Like, I think he's a good actor. He's really, like, I mean, Rocket Raccoon, like, the performance he did, like, vocally for Rocket in Guardians 3, like, it was so emotional. Like, it was so good.
And yet. So, do you think that Oppenheimer deserved the win?
Yes, although, like, I wouldn't have voted for Oppenheimer in as many categories as it won. Like, if I was a voter, I would be throwing those votes down for Past Lives. Like, definitely, Past Lives is my favorite of the 10. But yeah, I think Oppenheimer deserved to sweep a lot. Like, I really do think it was a big feat. My big upset is obviously Lily Gladstone losing Best Actress. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the only category where I felt upset about it.
I think a lot of people were really upset about it too. I didn't see Killers of the Flower Moon, so like I don't know about her performance.
Yeah. It's incredible. Like, she's incredible. I know it's on Apple TV and you don't have it, but if you ever get access to Apple TV, I do recommend Killers of the Flower Moon. It's good.
Yeah. I will say, so, like, I haven't seen a lot of the things that were Oscar nominees. Like, I saw Past Lives, which I really liked. I saw an hour of Oppenheimer. I didn't finish Oppenheimer. And I recently watched Poor Things, which is actually one of my recommendations. I loved Poor Things.
Poor Things is so good. And, like, I know I was like, Lily Gladstone should have won, but, like, Emma Stone is obviously a fantastic actress.
She, like, really did a good job.
Like, me saying that Lily should have won, like, obviously Emma was my runner-up for that category. It wouldn't have been anyone else. But, yeah.
I mean, I think Mark
Ruffalo should have won for
Poor Things. I was about to say that. Like, I think that's the real snub. My opinion is
that Mark Ruffalo was better than RDJ.
He was, like, hysterical in that.
I didn't know he had that in him.
Neither did I.
He was fantastic. And did you know it was supposed to be... He wasn't the first choice for that. I think it was a Pedro... No, it wasn't. No, it was an Oscar. Yeah, so Oscar Isaac was the person who was supposed to play.
I could see it being Oscar Isaac.
God, I'm so glad it was Mark Ruffalo. Like,
he brought something totally different.
Yeah, you wouldn't have, like, Oscar Isaac has the, like,
the charm,
sensuality,
sexuality.
The sensuality, but then, like, Mark Ruffalo brought something completely fresh to the role that was just, like, so entertaining.
Well, because his character, because he plays the lawyer who Bella kind of, like, runs away and has her adventure with. Like, yes, he is supposed to kind of be, like, a rake, but obviously Oscar Isaac could do it, but I don't think it would have come off the same way in the end when he's so, like, butthurt about... Everything.
It's so goofy. Like, he's so goofy.
Like, I definitely think Oscar Isaac could do it, but not like this.
Like, it's just like you kind of pity him a little bit. Like, he comes off like so silly.
Well, and like that's the thing. Like, I was telling my mom, I was like, you know, I kind of think that, you know, the name of it, you're supposed to think that like Bella's like the poor thing. Because of the way that she is. But, like, I would say that the real poor things are, like, all of the men in this narrative.
Yeah.
Like, because it's just, she doesn't act the way that they want her to act. And she's just like, I don't know what you mean.
<It's> like, I don't know what you want from me. I'm going to just do what I want.
Yeah. Well, and, like, people have talked about, like, at the beginning of the movie when that guy's like, oh, I'm in love with her, I want to marry her. And she's literally peeing on the floor, right? Because she's born sexy yesterday. But, like, even as the story goes on, like, they're so in... Like, there's
I didn't
so...
see the twist at the end coming.
No,
like,
I didn't either.
See that coming.
I didn't either. I really, really enjoyed it. Like, Poor Things is definitely one. It's like, you know, this is not a family-friendly recommendation, but it's so good. It's so poignant. Yeah. Like, I like Poor Things. I would put it in the same category as the way that I really like Saltburn. Like, mm-hmm. I actually, like, really like Saltburn.
I like Saltburn. It's not my favorite, but I definitely, like, am not a hater. Like, there's so many people who hate Saltburn. I'm like, really? It was a good time.
It was a good time. And I feel like a lot of people who hate it, like, either one, didn't think it was a good time, or two, just, like, didn't get what they were trying to say.
Yeah. And, like, you give me Jacob Elordi, I'm gonna watch it.
Princess Diana? Me? So Alex is also going to recommend one of the Oscar bait movies.
Yeah. So my recommendation is Anatomy of a Fall. And I honestly, it's been the movie that I haven't stopped thinking about. Mm-hmm. Like, out of all of the, because I, like, speed ran some of these right at the end, like, right before the Oscars. And this is one of them. And so I watched it a week ago and I haven't stopped thinking about it. It, the performances, the writing. So it did win best screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And Sandra Hüller was nominated for best actress, which I think that would have been also an interesting performance to have won. But I know, like, the history of the awards season, like, this season, she hasn't won much, so it wasn't gonna happen. But and then there's also, like, all of the memes about, like, the hot lawyer Swan.
The French lawyer.
And his dancing at the after party is, like, he's just, like, a fan favorite. Like, I love him.
And Messi the dog.
And then, obviously, Messi the dog, he's incredible. He's, like, when people say that he gave a good performance, like, they're not joking. Like, this dog, like, this is, like, the best. No, Shannon, you're laughing. But I'm serious. Like, this dog gave, like, an actual performance. You need to watch the movie so you get it.
I know. I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna watch it.
It's so it's a French film. And another thing that I find interesting is that France didn't actually submit it as their film for best international movie.
Oh yeah, I remember something about that.
Yeah, and anyways, that's a whole other thing. But I just, like, yeah, Messi the dog. So, like, it takes place in France, but our main character is actually German, but she speaks English. So one of the really interesting plot things about the movie is that, like, because there's a bit of a language barrier, like, she's dealing with French court, but French is not her first language.
Mm-hmm.
So she's trying to defend herself in court, speaking French, and, like, that's the whole thing that's, like, going up against her is that, like,
she's a foreigner,
she's not French. And then, and there's all, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's all these things that's, like, part of the plot that's so important, is that she's speaking English, like, basically the whole film, and everyone around her is speaking French.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely want to watch it. Like, I guess I wasn't, like, positive I knew what it was about. Like, I just knew that there was a dog in it and that it was French.
Like, it is, like, without giving any spoilers away, it is about a man who dies.
Mm-hmm.
And then his wife gets investigated to see if she killed him or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it's about. Did she do it? Mm-hmm. And there's a dog.
All right, so Alex, tell me about the Worm movie.
Dune Part 2.
That's
another movie I haven't stopped thinking about. Like, I actually, like, want to see it again. Like, oh my God.
Wait, so you saw it twice?
No, I haven't. Oh. I think about it. I think about going to see it again. I saw it in IMAX. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend. It is such a beautiful film, like, shot. And, like, acted, but also just like all the goofiness about it too. Like,
I've been loving the memes.
For the memes. Like, Austin Butler's really good in it. Yeah. Like, and I'm seeing that, like, seriously, like, he was really, really good in it, but he's, like, kind of funny because the voice he chooses to do is, like, I think he said he was trying to replicate, what's his face, his accent, Stellan Skarsgård's accent. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, he's trying to replicate them because they're from the same family.
Mm. Well, so and Florence Pugh said the same thing. Cause,
yeah, about, what's his name?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I'm so bad at this.
I know, I can't think of his name either. The orangutan, you know, he played the orangutan in the live action Jungle Book.
He has the, you guys know what, who we're talking about.
You guys
about.
Know what we're talking about. He has a fever.
The dude who's playing the Emperor in Dune.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I thought Austin Butler was really good at it. Even for the memes, like, I thought he was really good. I'm fascinated with them doing more movies, like how far they'll get, because from what I know of the Dune franchise is they get goofier.
See, well, and I wanted to ask this. So is Dune Part 1 and 2 just the first book?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. And then they're talking about doing Dune Messiah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's going to get made because this one is doing so well. Like, why wouldn't it? Because,
Christopher like, Walken. Dune-
yeah.
That's
there you go.
That's what I had to look it up.
I wanted to say Christoph Waltz, and I was like, no, not that guy.
I wanted to say William Dafoe again, but I was just thinking of Poor Things.
He was good in Poor Things.
He was.
Dune Part 2 was like the second half of the first book, and as soon as I got home from it, I was immediately like fascinated, and I wanted to like remember what happened in the book and like what the changes were. And then I just like fell down the rabbit hole of like spoiling the Dune franchise for myself, which I have no issue with.
Neither like, do I. Don't I. Care. Like I, and like I am like I don't know how spoiled I am on Dune 2. I'd say I'm like probably pretty spoiled on most things, but like. I'm so fascinated with the mythology, especially because, you know, like, Star Wars was inspired by Dune.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm so fascinated with learning about the mechanics and the politics. So I've loved watching TikToks of people just, like, going through it and talking about it because it's so fascinating, especially when it's presented in a non-pretentious way, because I feel like Dune is one of those books where it's like, I can't read that.
And I really do like what Denny has changed from the books.
Mm-hmm.
I think his choices and what he changed were so smart because the way he talks about it is like, oh, having read more books, you see like the author's intent become more mm-hmm. clear, because a lot of people who read the first book like didn't get the end, like didn't get it. So like in the movie, he made that clear with changing Chani a lot, which is Zendaya's mm-hmm. character.
Yeah.
So, like, out of everyone, like, Zendaya's character has changed the most, where she, in the books, is kind of just there for the ride. Like, she's just there. She doesn't have many, like, opinions or thoughts. Mm-hmm. But whereas in the movie, in part two, she, like, you see a lot of things happen through her lens. Like, through her eyes, she's almost like the audience, and you get to see her react to things happening.
Well, and I feel like you have to, especially knowing, like you said, like knowing what happens in the other books, it's like you have to start setting that up. And like we saw that with Percy Jackson, like they retold the first book from the perspective of knowing where book five is going, because
mm-hmm.
it makes things more clear. And I really like that. And like I'm totally here for Weird Worm Man. Go ahead and make that movie, Hollywood.
I think that's, like, book five or something. Like, I don't know how I got there. I was like, there's a worm man?
Okay,
like,
he becomes,
like half worm.
I thought that there were only three books.
Oh.
No. Listen. No, I know there's more than three, but I thought that, like, the main series was only three.
Oh, okay.
Is it?
It's like, what?
It's like 20 books. It's, like,
no,
20.
But everyone's like, oh, there's like five or six good books.
Okay, so maybe
and
it is. Maybe it's
there's
six.
Like a lot.
There's a lot, but I think
it sounds like Denis Villeneuve will not make more than three movies.
Yeah, which I don't think he should make more than three movies. Yeah. I think that's fine.
I also, like, I'm not going to say this on our podcast, but I'll talk to you about it later, about a certain character. I would just, like, want to know how they're going to deal with her. Yeah.
Okay.
That's all I have to say.
I want to know. Yeah. All right, well, that is going to take us into the news. So speaking of me reading Yellowface, so I actually, just before I started reading Yellowface, finished reading Defy the Storm. So I am officially caught up on phase three of The High Republic. And I want to say, so Defy the Storm, it's the YA book. It's by Justina Ireland and Tessa Grattan. It was not what I was expecting it to be, but not necessarily in a bad way.
That's good.
So, like, here's the thing about wave one of phase three, now that I've read it. I feel like what it really is doing is it's almost like a prologue, I feel like. It's moving characters into position. Like, it's, you know, the first part of, like, all of these, you know, books, like, even if it's the comics, it's having to situate you in, like, where the character is after the fall of Starlight Beacon. Like, it's been a year. What have they been doing? What's the state of the galaxy? Where are they at right now, right? So, like, Defy the Storm is about Vernestra, Avon, and Jordana Sparkburn. Like, those are our main three characters. And then also Xylan Graf. So I thought this was going to be a little bit more Vernestra heavy, but I would say without a doubt, this is an Avon Staros book, which is a big deal because this is her first, like, YA POV. So that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's big mad because, you know, her mom is, like, you know, friends with benefits with Marky and Ro.
Yeah.
So she's big mad, and she's full of so much rage. And I feel like we didn't get to see it too much because there was a lot going on in this book. But that was interesting because you play that off of Vernestra, who's lost everything and everyone. And her part of the story is she's looking for Emery, and she does find him, but it doesn't go the way that she expects it to go. And I really like where she leaves off, because the very end of this book was Vernestra giving some information to somebody who is going to be very important in Temptation of the Force. And girl, I think Temptation of the Force is about to be crazy.
Wait, we knew, though, that Temptation of the Force was going to be crazy. Yeah, just with that title. Like, we knew.
Well, but it's also, it's written by Tessa, who wrote this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, like, it's about to go down, okay? And then I think it was interesting because Jordana's side of the story, she learns something very interesting about the Nameless. So the Nameless have, like, so many names now. It's either the Leveler or the Nameless. My favorite thing that people call them is the Force Eater, because that's more literally what they're doing. And we learn in this book that it's not just people with the Force. So there's a lot that she sees. It was, like, almost like reading, like, a horror book from her perspective. So it was very interesting, but, like, it's still, like, I still haven't had, like, that, you know, like, that path of vengeance sink my teeth into yet, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I really feel like we've positioned, so, like, I feel like Eye of the Storm and Defy the Storm, right? That what they were called? Eye of the Storm and Defy the Storm. Are really pushing into Temptation of the Force in a very interesting way. But I also feel like Eye of the Storm and the comics are really pushing into, you know, Kevin Scott announced that he's doing another audio drama about Lorna D.
Girl. We love Cav.
Listen, for my comic book readers out there, Keith Trennis, the picture of Keith Trennis on that cover, she has ripped off her Jedi emblem.
Ooh.
And in the comics, she has to team up with Lorna D.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very Vernestra vibes. But like, not Avar's, Vernestra, it's very Ventress vibes.
But like, did they say that Avar is also going to be that she audio is. Drama? And she all three is. Of them have to team up?
She is. And like, here's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Lorna and Avar have some very complicated history from the comics.
Yeah.
It's giving, like, I want to say that it's giving for, it's giving Ventress and Quinlan, but like not in the romance way, just in the, yeah. in the Jedi with the Darksider way mm-hmm. is what it's giving. And I'm like looking very heavily. So I feel like phase three, like to me, I kind of felt like it got off to a little bit of a slow start, but it's really building right now.
Yeah. So. Okay. That's good.
The only thing I really haven't been impressed with was the middle grade novel, which isn't really a surprise, but it was fun. But I feel like it's not connecting the way these other things are connecting. And then for our last bit of news, we did get announced there are new Star Tours locations coming our way.
Yeah, and characters, potentially. Yes,
potentially.
Ahsoka, which we knew,
mm-hmm.
but and Mandalorian.
Didn't they also say Andor?
Yeah. Well, I was gonna drumroll to Andor, but you beat me to it. Okay. Anyways, but yes, Andor was the big surprise.
Yeah.
Because we knew about Ahsoka, and it's kind of crazy to me that Mando hasn't been added yet.
That's true.
But Andor, big surprise, big surprise.
Do you think? They'll do, remember the planet with, like, the star, what was that episode called?
Star.
No. It's, like, they're on that planet, and it's in the sky. It's kind of like the Aurora Borealis. You know what I'm talking about? You know that episode?
Of Andor?
Yes. It's with, you know, it's when they steal all the credits with the space lesbians.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking maybe. About.
Well, it'll probably be, like, Ferrick, right?
Probably. Pharynx? But, like, that would be so visually, like...
Yeah.
Stunning. I would love that.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine if they add, like they add, like, Scarif? Like, Rogue One?
Oh, my God. I was just thinking that. Like, they haven't added any Rogue One. No. I'm worried that it's going to be, like, 95% Ahsoka. And then, like, what? Like, it's like, oh, you get one character from Andor. Like, yeah. No location.
Like, it's like Mothma or something. Which, like, aww. I wouldn't hate. Like, but
Mothma works for, like, so many things. Because yeah. You could be like, oh, well, that's her from the prequels.
Yeah, that's true. So it's not just, like, an Andor thing. They also haven't
Mothma
ever...
Mothma should be in it. Like, I'm not complaining. Mothma should be in it.
Have they ever done, like, solo scenes?
No.
Like, could you imagine if you're on Star Tours and you do the Kessel Run? Like,
that'd be cool.
Why haven't we done that?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
I rode Star Tours when I was at Disney, and I got pod racing. Best. Love the pod racing.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't got an Exegol in a really long time. I'm wondering if they took it out.
Yeah.
Like, maybe.
Maybe.
Hopefully.
All right. So I think with that, it is time to talk about our bad bachelors and our one bachelorette mom, Echo, to mm-hmm. be precise. He's mom. Like, he was mothering
He gave roses to all our bachelors.
He did. And he's here for a short time, not a long time, but long enough to mother and then leave. All right. So like we said at the beginning, we both have really, really been enjoying Omega and Crosshair's new dynamic, seeing them grow together. And that's what episode 4 was. It's called A Different Approach. And it's all about Omega and Crosshair escaping the Empire, and they crash land on this planet, and they have to figure out, okay, we need to get a ship that's not marked by the Empire. We don't have any money. How are we gonna do these things? Which, like, this felt like fan fiction the whole episode.
Yeah, like, it really did, where they're like, you have to, like, solve problems like where to get money.
Well, they, like, put on, like, disguises.
Yeah, they just, like, find disguises. I'm like, yeah. Cool. And cool, then they cool, cool. need, okay, I have to go down this little, like, rabbit hole about the money, because I was watching the, I was rewatching the episode, and I was like, so this woman is going to charge them 15,000 credits each to be smuggled onto a ship.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I was like, I immediately need to know how much money that is. So I'm Googling conversion rates. And, like, I couldn't come up with, like, a perfect conversion because different sites were saying different things and saying, well, it was like the money in 1973. Or 70, someone said something about pre-inflation. And I'm like, that makes no sense. I'm like, I don't know. I found one site that was like, one credit is 4.5 USD. Oh. And I was like, I don't know. But then this other site was like, well, you have to figure out what kind of credit it was. Was it a Republic credit?
Was it an Imperial credit?
I'm like, okay, I give up. And then I just stopped looking. I just wanted to know how much money they need. She was gambling. Like, she was gambling a lot of money.
Did they say how much money it cost for regular passage?
No.
Because, see, like, I feel like that's what I need to know. What's she reasonable? Just,
she asked for their, like, passport, and they're like, we don't have that.
And then she's like, oh, okay, give me 30,000 credits.
No, Omega, like, was, like, being mysterious before she said that.
She was. Omega, like, she really, listen, Crosshair is, like, very protective of Omega, which we'll, like, talk more about later, but he's really, like, letting her be jeweled in this episode.
Crosshair lets her bejewel.
Well, that's why it's called a different approach, because, like, the whole time he's like, please let me kill people. This would be so much easier.
She's like, no.
He's like, if you would just let me kill people, it would solve all of our problems. She's like, no, yeah, we're not going to kill people.
I do kind of love how she's like, you can't kill people. And then she gets her really excited about the new, like, bow she gets.
That is true. Well, I love that the part in the episode where, like, their backs are against the wall and it's like, ugh, fine, Crosshair, we'll do it your way. And he's like, yes, let's go. Like, when she's gambling this money, I really want to say, like, I feel like this episode did such a good job of, like, grounding you in the world. Like, it felt really tangible. I loved seeing how the Imperials operate on this world because, like, it was very much like they take bribes, they're willing to, like, let things go, they kind of work with, like, the crime, yeah, and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's very obviously corrupt, and I like the way that they show that. It's not like the clean-cut empire that we're used to seeing. Because, like, when the Imperial sees that Omega is gambling, his first thought isn't, oh, well, that's illegal. It's, oh, let me beat her. And when he can't, he's like, okay, fine, just give me your money.
Yeah.
Like,
so she made 45,000 credits.
That's
she
a lot
needed
of money.
30. She needed 30. She made 45. He took 10. And then that little kid also wanted 10.
Yeah. She I had don't know. Enough. But
yeah.
Imperials, I was doing all the imperialist.
The second time I watched, I was like mathing it all out. I was like, this is fascinating.
That is fascinating.
Money, like currency. And then, like, also, obviously, because, like, currency differs from countries, does that also mean that, like, in the Star Wars world,
well, okay, so, like, we have precedent for that in Mando because of the squishy Mon Cala money.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, I'm right.
But because we're under Imperial regime right now,
then the standard credit would be Imperial.
It'd be Imperial credit. So I should have dug more. I don't, like, I gave up too easily.
There is an answer, Alex. If anybody can do it, it's you.
It's just like, no, there were too many answers. Like, too many people had different opinions on it. So that's why I gave up.
Yeah.
Because I was like, there's not one answer.
It's definitely in Imperial
credits.
It
seemed
credits,
like a
though.
Lot of money. It seemed like a ton of money. Like, I was like, how does a child gamble this much money?
They were very freely gambling that money. Like, and, like, my favorite thing is when they say something about, like, I haven't seen you or your dad around here. And it's like, Cross Dad? Cross Dad?
Cross dad becomes cross father.
Oh my god, he becomes cross father. Like, and just especially like, I feel like it's so obvious after this episode, and then I think it's episode 8 when she's like emulating him.
We have not watched episode 8 yet.
What am I talking about? Episode 7, which is emulating him with the toothpick. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I feel like they've built such an interesting bond between Omega and Crosshair, and it really shows, like, how much time they've spent together. Like, that was, like, 6 months that they were trapped together, and she was visiting him every single day. Like, clearly, they are, like, very closely bonded. And I've seen a lot of people on Twitter saying, like, which side of the custody battle are you on? Is it Hunter or Crosshair? And I personally feel like Omega has two dads, which is Crosshair and Hunter. And then she also has a mom, which is Echo. And then she has two uncles, which is Alive Tech, because he's alive, and Wrecker.
We'll get into that. We'll get into tech. I read your notes,
Alex, and I laughed. I was laughing. Like,
what did I write?
You just used tech instead of...
Well, because it, like, to differentiate. Because, like, the X Trooper is, like, there's multiple of them. So I was like, it's easier to just say tech because there's the other X Trooper.
Sure. Uh-huh. Anyway, so the end of this episode, they do manage to escape. They work together. Batcher, amazing. 10 out of 10. No notes. Get your bag, girl. Doing so good. They escape. They send a coded message to Hunter and Wrecker. And there's this moment where Crosshair is, like, telling Omega, like, you know, it's been a long time. Like, they might not, like, he's, like, insinuating, like, they could have died. Like...
Yeah. And
I think that was partially him just being afraid to see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And that reunion, dang.
The music.
The way it's shot, mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost like Hunter doesn't want to believe it was her. Like, he doesn't come off right away.
Somebody mentioned that, like, maybe he let Wrecker go first just to make sure. That she was there before he came out.
Because it could have been, like, an ambush, right?
It could have been. That hug between Hunter and Omega, like...
Hmm.
It's so good. And then the distrustfulness of them with Crosshair was very, like... It was very interesting. And then, going into the next episode, like, they kind of... You can tell that... Some time has passed, but there's still a lot of growing pains. Like, Wrecker accepts Crosshair pretty quickly, I feel like, in episode 5, The Return. But Hunter is still very, like, no.
I do love that Wrecker's reason is that Omega trusts him.
Yeah.
For him, that's enough. Like, Omega trusting him is reason enough for him to trust him.
And I feel like that's so in character for Wrecker.
Yeah.
Like, you have to remember all the way back at the beginning, like, I would argue that Wrecker and Crosshair were extremely close. Like, mm-hmm. out of all of the batch, I feel like they were very, very close. So, I think that Wrecker wants to trust Crosshair, and knowing that Omega trusts him is enough for him to let himself do that. But not so much for Hunter. Like, I think Hunter still really felt that betrayal of him leaving. And mm-hmm. I just, like, Alex, when I watched episode 5 and it was called The Return, I kept thinking about, like, what are we returning to? Lo and behold, it's the anniversary of the episode The Outpost, which is, like, the episode.
Yeah.
Devastating. Like, that was when Crosshair realized that the Empire was never going to be loyal to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is loyal to a fault. And that fault is he put his loyalty in somebody who was not going to give him the same. And I never in a million years thought we would come back to this planet. I could not believe that that's where they took us. Like, these writers, round of applause.
And yeah, like the, and just like the moments of Crosshair like giving his respect to his like fallen
comrade.
Like him, he was there and like, man.
Well, because you remember too, like before that episode, it's like he didn't care about, you know, regs and all that kind of stuff. And that's when he did. It was Mayday mm-hmm. who really made him understand. And to see him like honor these fallen soldiers in that way, and for Hunter to see him do that, I think it's just really clear, like, that there's something bigger going on. Like, I think it's really obvious in episode 5 that Crosshair has not talked about anything that happened to him. Like, they know that something bad happened. They knew that, like, Crosshair was being held prisoner by that point, but he didn't talk about what happened at the outpost. Like,
yeah.
They were returning to, like, that moment when he killed that officer and was officially like, I'm not Empire anymore.
And they questioned him in this episode, like, what did you do to get on the Empire's bad side? Like, they were asking him, and like, for him, it was deep because they were in the place.
They were there.
Everything went down.
And I feel like it was so close to the surface. Like, it was so raw for like that emotion. And he just, I don't think any of the Batch are very good with like feelings. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was like, I think very, very important that they like went here for this to happen. Before they go to the outpost, though, we are on Pabu, and you did mention, where are the boys?
Yeah, didn't they drop them off on Pabu?
They sure did. Where are they? Are they okay? Are they safe? Where's
what
Stack?
What do you think that they do?
I think Stack like, is stacking.
No, but, like, you don't think they got to Pabu and they were given, like, roles? Like, you can't just, like, be a lazy butt.
No,
like,
for sure.
They arrived and they were given jobs. Like, yeah. What are they doing?
Stacking.
Stacking what?
I don't know. I think whatever can be stacked is being stacked. Right? What was it? It was Stack, and I don't remember the other two's names anymore.
Unfortunately, we deleted our notes from last week.
We never wrote them down. We just looked them up.
Yeah, because we decided we're only calling them the boys.
Because they are. That's all that matters. It was, I remember it was Stack and then something super stupid. Mox. It was Stack and Mox and something else.
I don't know.
Because it was Jack and Max.
When I was making these notes, I was like writing, I think I wrote the men.
The men? Where are the men?
This part when I'm talking about Echo and then about Echo telling Omega to get the men in line. And I had to write men and not boys to not confuse us.
We can't confuse us. Yes, we're talking about the Batch. Not get the men in line. Men. The men. Yeah. Mother Echo is mothering.
Well, yeah, okay.
I do want to bring up, so this is something that we've been seeing as the episode has been going on with Crosshair's continuously shaking hand as well.
Yeah.
That was a big...
That kept coming back.
Yeah, that was a big thing at the beginning, and that kept coming back as well. Especially, like, so... You said on here that it's very Dune, but snow, because there's, like, a big worm at the outpost.
Oh, my gosh. No, but, like, it, like, moved, like, the worms in Dune.
No, I know, but, like, okay, so, like, listen, okay? So, it's this game, right? Subnautica, below zero, so it's snowy, and it's the same thing. They even have a device called a thumper that they put in there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So that is Dune.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my gosh. Look at all these threads that they're weaving together. But, like, they did such a good fanficky trope of, like, Hunter gets, like, trapped underground with the worm and, like, Crosshair's on top and has to go and find him. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that. It's like they start to trust each other. And
they didn't,
like,
learn to ride the worm.
Not learn to. Well, he's not Lisan Al-Ghaib. He's not the Nissan Altima.
Yeah, but they can all ride the worms.
Oh.
It's not. He's not special for riding a worm.
Like, that's not why he's special.
Okay, Timothée Chalamet is only special because he wrote The Biggest Worm. Like, that's a plot point in Dune Part 2 is that he's riding the biggest worm.
Oh, that's amazing. Wow.
Zendaya did not learn how to ride the worm. Like, Zendaya is capable of riding the worm.
But her worm isn't bigger. It's not the biggest.
No.
Anyway, we get a great group hug with the batch minus Echo. Or was Echo there? I can't even remember if Echo was there. I don't think he was.
Echo?
Was he there?
In episode 5?
Yeah. Did he hug it out?
Yeah. They arrive at the end. Well, oh, wait. Did they? Echo was not in that group hug.
No, he was not in the group hug because Echo stayed behind.
Yes, no, but Echo was busy getting information out of the database because they went there because they thought that they could like jailbreak the tech pad that Omega stole.
Yeah.
So, like, they weren't able to get the coordinates for Tantus, but that was their goal, but they may have gotten other information.
Yeah, well, because it was all medical stuff, which is mm-hmm. gonna be important. They have that medical data because they don't have tech who could probably just answer every question that they have right now. But they have a lot of... that's gonna be important when they find out why the Empire wants... specifically why the Empire wants Omega later on. So getting into episode 6 and 7, so this was Infiltration and Extraction. It was a two-part episode that they released all at once. And this was focused most heavily on Rex's kind of like rebellious clone arc, I would say.
What he's been doing in the meantime since the last time we saw him. I do think what's really important in this episode is that he gets to show Hunter the good that he's doing. Because I know he, like, tried to convince Hunter, like, join the rebellion. Like, you could do really good stuff here. Yeah. So it's, like, kind of cool that Hunter got to see him.
I kind of think that... I mean, obviously, I think that the inevitable end is probably that they're going to join Rex's unit. Because everybody wants to except for Hunter, and with Hunter it's always still the fact that he wants Omega to have like a normal life. Somebody brought that up, that like he just wants Omega to have like a normal childhood, like as normal as possible, and I think he's going to have to realize that it's not going to happen.
Like, she's growing up and she's not had a normal childhood.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of, they're past that now. And, like, he needs to let that go. And that's really sad. But I think that now that he has Omega back, he might start to realize that. And he's also going to probably realize that he can't, like, hiding away with her is not going to be enough. He's gonna have to do something because they're gonna keep coming.
Live on Pabu with the boys.
Yeah, can't. I mean, I don't know why Hunter's trying to become a boy dad.
Throwing the football around with the boys on Pabu.
Teach him how to play catch, the good old baseball. I really liked in this episode that they to find out that they're working very closely with Senator Singh, which was that was in Clone Wars season 7, right?
I believe so.
I remember correctly.
Yes.
Yes. So I like that they brought that back because it's, I feel when she's around, I feel like Padme's essence.
Like Senator Chuchi?
Yes.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
She like has the like decorum of Padme.
Yeah. Like I feel like she, if Padme was around, this is exactly what Padme would be doing.
Where she would be. She would this have is been where at she that meeting.
Be. Yes. Yes. Like, she would be working with the clones. She would be working with Mon Mothma. Like, she would be in it. And
I wish she was in it. I wish. I miss Padme.
I miss Padme. Is she safe? Is she all right? She's not. So I really like that. And I like that she brought up that, because she's basically, you know, in deep cover, like she's still a senator. And Palpatine is concerned about planets rebelling. And what I liked about this is that we learn, you know, there is still a little bit of divide between who was once Republic and who was once Separatist. And it's like, those lines can't exist anymore. You're either Empire it's like you or
need,
not.
We need to work together because there's no way of us, like, overcoming the Empire if we don't put our differences aside.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, and, like, obviously the wider galaxy, like, does not know this, but they were pit against each other on purpose because that will make it harder for them to work together because they were at odds. They were not on the same side.
Yeah. And so, what Shuji says is saying is that, you know, I've heard that the Emperor, like Palpatine, is worried that planets will get together and rise up. Like, that is, like, what the rumblings are around.
And all it takes is, like, you know, this is what you see, like, in Bad Batch, this is what you see in Andor, this is what you see in Rebels, is, like, it's all these little pieces scattered throughout. Mm-hmm. It was never one, like, obviously there was, like, a rebellion, quote-unquote, under Mon Mothma or whatever, but, like, it was always, like, these little scattered pieces.
It was never, like, a big attack until Death Star 1. Like, it was never, like, a big thing until then.
And I think it couldn't be until Jyn Erso was like, I know where the plans are.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what kind of, that was the first ever, like, big public rebellion, like, siege.
Yeah, because they had to work in secret, like.
Yeah, well, that's why they didn't want to go to Scarif, because they didn't want to be revealed. And then, as we know, like, Scarif, like, that episode, not episode, that movie takes place, like, literally right into A New Hope. So, like, that happens really quickly. Like, once they expose themselves, they got to move. They got to start figuring stuff out, which is, like, super interesting because it's, like, 20 years of, like, just little groups here and there. Like, they're all working for the same thing, but they're all scattered around the galaxy. So this is where we're, like, I would say, like, our first introduction to Clone Trooper X. And we find out, because this is, you know, we've seen this clone trooper and everybody's like, it's Tech. But we find out that there's a bunch of these guys.
Yeah, they're like super spies.
They're winter soldiers. It's a bunch of winter soldiers. Like, because they capture this trooper because he was going to assassinate Senator Singh. So Rex and his team capture him. And we find out that the X troopers have been completely brainwashed. They don't have any identifying numbers. They don't know who they are. All they know is that they are a special operative for the Empire. And, like, they're given their task and they do it. Like, the next Clone Trooper X gets activated. He even says, like, why was I activated? To go kill this Clone Trooper X so, like, people don't figure out what's going on.
There's, like, literally no attachments.
No.
Like, they're just brainwashed spies that, like, assassins.
It's like a droid.
And so when, I guess, like, we'll refer to the second clone trooper, ex-trooper as Tech, because that's why I made my notes like that, because it gets confusing. When he gets to the place where the tracker has led him, he also sees Omega. So he calls the Empire and is like, well, the person who Hemlock's looking for is also here. Like, that's more important, obviously.
Yeah. And that's kind of how everything gets tied together with this, because Rex, you know, with Clone Trooper X, they have this information. They call in Echo. They're, like, bringing in the Bad Batch. And because they call them in because they want Crosshair to talk to this Clone Trooper X that they found. And we find out that, like, Crosshair was almost one of them, but he said that, how did he put it?
He was, like, too defective. Like,
yeah, being defective is in his nature. Like, he couldn't be turned or something. Which
I don't think it's specifically that the Bad Batch can't be turned. It's specifically Crosshair. Because I still think it's Tech.
I agree, because I think that the thing about Crosshair is his loyalty. And I think that they couldn't erase everything from him because then it, like, it wouldn't have mattered. You know what I mean? Like, I think it just, like, didn't work on him.
It's almost like these troopers don't have loyalty. They only know to obey command. Like, there is, like, no loyalty at all.
Yeah, because, like, that was the thing with Crosshair. It's like, yeah, good soldiers follow orders, but, like, he did it because he was loyal, and he thought that that was, like, a two-way street.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. So, like, he was never, like... It's so weird to say. It's like he wasn't Empire, just like how he's not necessarily Rebellion. He's loyal to whoever's loyal to him. And that's something that, like, the Empire couldn't wipe away.
Give him that. Yeah. And they can't give him loyalty.
Yeah. And this is when Mother Echo gives Omega the blaster, and we don't see Mother Echo anymore after this, but...
Yeah, and Mother Echo tells Omega, like, you need to get them in line.
Yeah.
Like...
They need to be working together. What's going on? I almost feel like Echo is, like... Echo's, like... Echo is, like, mother to all of the Batch.
Yeah.
And like then...
Like, Omega's not, like, parenting with the fathers, like... She is grandmother.
Echo is grandmother. No, but it makes so much sense because he's, like, spoiling his grandchild.
Yeah, so, like, so we've cracked it. Echo isn't actually mother. Echo is grandmother. Echo is
grandmother. Like a grandmother, darling. Oh, my God. Alex also mentioned that this is just like Scandal.
Oh, yeah. I'm rewatching Scandal, and, like, there's a reason why Scandal's not on my Rex. Like, it's just exists. Scandal, like, exists in the best way, like, where I love it, but it is, like, ridiculous. And there's a running joke in, like, season, like, 4 or 5 where they just keep calling the vice president a Muppet, and I don't know how they got there. Like, what? Like, what? Like, it's just so crazy. This show, there's, like... The only reason I made this comparison is because the X-Troopers are like the B613 side. They're these super assassin spies that work for the American government and kill Americans on American soil.
Oh.
And they're basically brainwashed, and they're rid of attachments. And if any of them ever make an attachment, they're thrown in a bunker until they're literally more brainwashed. Like this. Yes.
That's literally like this. So that's why
I was like, this is like Scandal. Yeah.
Wow. You think they watched Scandal when they were making this episode?
Maybe.
I think so. So now that who we assume to be is Tech, the new Clone Trooper X, once he's on the planet, like, they blow up the base. They're like, basically, like, an all-out battle is, like, breaking out because they want to extract Omega. That's what this Clone Trooper X infiltrated the space to extract Omega. Mm-hmm. So that leads into episode 7. And really, this whole episode is just, like, them escaping in Clone Trooper X, aka Tech, following them. And there's a lot of reasons why, like, obviously everybody before this episode, it was just kind of like, that's gonna be Tech, Winter Soldier Tech, like, we just, like, assumed, like,
his the things, like, his body, like, that kind of thing. But, like, the thing that tipped me off was, okay, so, like, through extraction, the regs are, like, telling Tech, like, Clone Trooper Tech, like, stun. Put your gun on stun. Like, we want her alive.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. And then, so he, as they're escaping in that shuttle, he shoots down the shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
And the regs are like, what the heck did you do? Like, we told you not to do that. But in my mind, this is how I know it's Tech. The math, the physics, the calculations, like, all of that science stuff he was able to do in his mind while he was shooting. And he was like, if I shoot at this angle, at this time, at this part of the ship, when it goes down, like, no one's going to be harmed. Like, it's just going to go down. And I'm like, no other clone trooper is that smart.
Well, and I also think that like, because I agree, I do agree with that. Is it a little bit of a reach? It could be, but I agree with it. And the reason I agree with it is because I think you mentioned, like, this clone trooper, like, really doesn't do what is asked of him ever. Like,
ever.
Because it's Commander Wolf was, like, the big reveal here. That, you know, he's kind of in charge of this unit. And, like, everything he tells this clone trooper, the clone trooper's like, nah, I'm gonna do it this way. And, like, he was never wrong. Like, I agree. Like, he shot down that shuttle, and I really think it was like, you told me not to kill her, but we also have to capture her. And if I shoot the shuttle down, she's gonna survive, and then we're gonna capture her. Are you stupid? Like, that's what it kind of felt like to me. When, like, what a tech move, you know? So, like, I personally think that, because, like, he has a moment with Crosshair, right? Because he talks to Crosshair.
Yes, my little quote. I wrote it down.
You did.
So he's basically, like, drowning Crosshair in the river, like, in these rapids that are going down. He's drowning Crosshair. And he says to Crosshair, you have the chance to be one of us. Like, and, like, obviously that's alluding to the fact that Crosshair was supposed to be a ex-trooper. But also, like, I'm like, is this, like, tech saying, like, to Crosshair, like, you had the chance to, like, leave with all of us. Like, you betrayed us in this other way. Like, before all of this.
See, I feel like no. Because I feel like if this is tech, which I really do think it is, I feel like he doesn't have any memories.
No, I don't think so either. I think it's just like a thematic kind of
thing. Yeah.
I don't think he actually can recognize that that's my brother, like, that is Crosshair.
I agree with that. I think that I think waking him up is going to be really interesting. So I was looking at the episode titles. So we have one episode, you know, this coming week. And then we have one episode the next week. So that's Bad Territory and The Harbinger. But then we get another two-parter, which is Identity Crisis and Point of No Return. And I really do think that might be tech, like, waking up.
When do you think Ventress is gonna appear?
See, like, what a question. Like, we haven't even...
We're this deep. We're seven episodes deep.
We're halfway. Ventress still hasn't We're halfway. Appeared. Like, I don't... I kind of feel like she's the Harbinger. Okay,
wait,
so, like,
when is that? Is that next week or the week after?
It's the week after. Okay. This week is Bad Territory. Probably. So, okay. Like, here's the thing.
The Harbinger is definitely Ventress.
Like, okay, so they find out that, like, through all of this and, like, why they want Omega, they find out it's because, you know, Nala Se wants her, and then they talk to her more. Well, not that Nala Se wants her, but you know what I mean. They talk to her more, and she said, they're like, why did they want you the first time? And she said, to make Nala Se work. And then she tells them about what Nala Se was doing and, like, taking samples and all this. And then they find out that she has a really high M count. And all of them look at each other like, What's an M count?
Do you know what an M count is? And Rex is like, I think I've heard about it before.
I think I've heard that word before. And somebody pointed out, they're like, if Tech was there, he would have just explained it immediately. And so I think logically the next step is probably, like, what is an M count? And I feel like when they encounter Vernestra, it's because they both start with a V. When they encounter Ventress, I really do think that that's when it's going to be, like, the realization that she, like, maybe that could be the identity crisis. Maybe it's that Omega has the Force. I don't know why that would make her have an identity crisis, but unless we find out that she is blonde because she's related to Ventress.
But isn't, like, Rex also blonde?
I've been thinking about that ever since I mentioned that theory. As soon as we stopped recording, I was like, isn't Rex blonde? I immediately thought of that after we were done recording. And I have just chosen to ignore that.
They're just related. The three of them are chaos triplets.
I've just chosen to ignore that. Just completely slide that under the rug. But obviously Crosshair does not drown, and he he escapes Tech X Trooper, and mm-hmm. he goes over the waterfall, and he survives.
They have to show it at the end that he survived, right?
Then. If that is Tech, I really think that this was them being funny.
Oh, look, he fell again.
He fell again. Like, that is such a, like, it always makes me think of House of Hades, because the dedication in House of Hades, because I guess I'm going to spoil Mark of Athena just a little bit, but, like, at the very end of Mark of Athena, Percy and Annabeth, like, fall, as like, they're falling into Tartarus, right? And that's where the book ends. It's, like, a big dramatic thing. And then the dedication in House of Hades is to the readers. And they're like, hey, sorry for the last cliffhanger. No, I'm not. Like, that's what it felt like. So the last bit is they convince Wolf to let them escape. I will admit, it was really interesting when Rex and Wolf were like, Rex? Wolf? Like, because they end up together in Rebels, correct? Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think so, yeah.
I'm pretty sure. People were, like, very invested in this. I am so sorry.
I am so sorry to the people who care.
I am so sorry to this man. I have never seen this man before in my life. I don't know who this man is. I'm a fake Star Wars fan. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
It does make me want to rewatch some of those Rebels. I want to rewatch Rebels. Like, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to rewatch Rebels, but I haven't. It's so much easier to say I want to rewatch Rebels than I want to finish Clone Wars, because that's not going to happen.
That is a true statement. I agree.
It's not
going to happen. I get closer to saying I want to rewatch season 7 of Clone Wars.
Yeah.
But not the whole thing.
No, not the whole thing. Well, season 7 is so easy, because it's three arcs. It's like, you get the sisters, right? Mm-hmm. The Martell sisters. You get the Bad Batch, and then you get Mandalore. Like, that's so easy.
Everyone's going to, like, hate on us and say these are fake fans because we are.
Pooing
on Clone Wars. Because
we are fake fans. I don't know who any of the clones are, unless it's Rex or Cody.
True. Or the Bad Batch. They look the same to me.
They look exactly the same to me. And, like, I could tell you which one Wolf is now, because Wolf only has one eye. But, like...
Yeah, and he has his little wolfie.
Somebody tweeted saying, could you... It was, like, that book meme where it's, like, how long Star Wars is, and then it was how long Star Wars would be if Dave Filoni didn't like wolves. It's like, yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, because also people have been... Apparently there's a big theory that this ex-trooper is Cody. I'm so sorry. I don't care where Cody is. I'm so sorry.
Here's my theory, is that, like, if it's not Tech, I will be so upset about the lack of mourning Tech.
Yes, I agree with that.
Like, because I feel like they glossed over the fact that Tech died.
Well, and I feel like they do mourn him because it's so obvious that he's not there, like the absence.
And I guess, like, I'm complaining, but also it has been 6 months to them. I mean, like, as a viewer, it's
the thing about it is, though, like, all that has been shown is, like, the absence of Tech, right? Like, instead of him being there, like, the lack of him is almost like a character in and of itself. And I think it's really clear that our Bad Batch has not properly mourned Tech. I feel like if he really was gone, we probably would have already seen them, like, talk to Fee. We might have seen them, like,
do something with the goggles. Book. And that's why I think Clone X is Tech.
Yeah, like, it feels like the wound is still open. And I agree. Like, I think if they don't do anything with it, then it will kind of feel like they just dropped the ball on him. And I have a lot of faith in these writers, and I feel like it is going this way. And I will be really upset if it's not actually Tech, because, like, I feel like I really don't feel delusional in thinking that Tech is alive. Like, I really feel like it's there. Even mm-hmm. if he's not Clone Trooper X, like, I feel like he's alive.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Clone Trooper X might be, like, a red herring. Like, he could be somewhere else.
Yeah, running around goggleless in the woods.
Yeah.
He's like a wild man out in the woods. Maybe his receding hairline has grown out. Everybody was saying, take off the helmet. Let me see that receding hairline. Yeah. He's I keep forgetting that we're going to have Ventress, though. Like, we're halfway through, and I just feel like there's still so much that needs to happen.
Yeah.
So we have two episodes, and then we get, like, a big turning point. And then mm-hmm. Juggernaut. I don't know. That makes me think of Wrecker.
Me too.
Yeah. And then Into the Breach, Flash Strike, and the Cavalry has arrived.
And that's the finale.
And that's the finale. I'm kind of surprised that the last episode isn't like a two-parter. Like, I was surprised when I was looking that up.
Yeah, I do wonder if the episode before that, though, is going to be a big cliffhanger and they want to leave us for a week maybe. With something.
Well, you know, the other two seasons had 16 episodes and this one only has 15.
It could be a long episode. Instead of them actually separating it into two, it could just be one long one.
I could see that. Guess time will tell. What fate will befall our bachelors?
And bachelorette grandma.
Grandma?
It's like the golden bachelorette.
The golden bachelorette! Not Echo the golden bachelorette! Oh my god.
She's just a single grandmother looking for love.
A single mom who works two jobs. Oh yeah. My god!
9 to 5.
Oh my god, that is so Echo. Dang. Dang. He just wants his sons to be happy and healthy. His two sons that have a daughter, and then his other two sons who are there. Dang. Yeah, that means that he would be like mother of the bride, mother of the groom at Tech and Fee's wedding.
Walking Tech down the aisle.
Batcher would be like the ring bearer.
I like can picture it so clearly on Pavu. Like I am like picturing it.
I know. Like they have like a beautiful like flower arch overlooking the ocean.
And then they have like the reception on that like little like cliff veranda that they have. Yeah. And the sunset that and they have on Pavu.
Echo would drink so much wine. Echo totally has
grandma's drunk.
You totally have a cup that says, like, it's wine o'clock.
Grandmother Echo goes to TJ Maxx every Sunday.
Grandmother after Echo. Church. After church. He's clutching his pearls. I think he goes to Joann's and looks for fabric samples. I love that. Grandmother Echo, the golden bachelorette. Well, I think with that's I don't think there's anything else we could say. So yeah, that's gonna do it for this episode of The Bad Bachelor. If you would like to keep the conversation going, you can find us pretty much always on Twitter or Instagram. I am at McCarter Shannon and Alex is at Alex Leonis. You can find the show at lip_lightsabers, and we will see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.